The railroad career of John Luther Jones, best known by his nickname Casey Jones, ended in the wreck which took his life and gave rise to the famous Casey Jones song. I, Simeon Webb, was his fireman, and I will tell you about our last trip together the night in April 1900, which ended in the fatal wreck. In those days, just as today, the Illinois Central Railroad had two fast daily passenger trains between Chicago and New Orleans, numbers 1 and 3 southbound and 2 and 4 northbound. Their schedules were very fast and would be considered so even today. In fact, one of the regular engineers, a Mr. Hatfield, who held the run between Memphis, Tennessee and Canton, Mississippi, gave it up because of nervousness. Up to that time, Casey Jones had never been a passenger engineer, but was running freight between the towns of Water Valley, Mississippi, and Jackson, Tennessee. When several engineers whose seniority entitled them to take over Mr. Hatfield's run passed it by, Casey became eligible for the job and took it. The run was given to him also, I think, because he was known as a daring but good engineer, and it required both. His fireman, however, Wes McKinney, his name was, didn't have enough seniority, wasn't old enough, railroad men call it, to go with him. So I was selected from the list of eligible colored firemen. I had previously been in freight service also. We had been on the run about 4 months, and on the morning of the last Sunday in April 1900, we brought northbound train number 2 into Memphis from Canton, arriving at 6:20 a.m. Ordinarily, we would not have gone out again until next morning on number 3. During the day, Casey installed on his engine a new whistle, which a friend of his worked in the shop and made specially for him. It was a sort of calliope and had 6 tones. That same day, we were called about 9 p.m. for the run back to Canton with southbound number 1, known as the Southern Mail, due out of Memphis at 11:05 p.m., and whose engineer, Mr. Sam Tate, had taken sick. We reported at the roundhouse about 10:30, where we learned that number 1 was running late from Chicago, falling down, as we railroad men call it. While getting our engine 382 ready, we got report on number 1 that it was still late, and it was about midnight when we finally backed from the roundhouse to the Poplar Street station and coupled on to our train of 9 cars. We departed at 12:35 a.m., 1 hour and 30 minutes late. Calhoun Street, where the Memphis Central Station now stands, was then a small outlying passenger stop. After leaving it, our run of 187 miles from Memphis to Canton had 4 scheduled stops. The first was Sardis, Mississippi, 50 miles south, where we arrived at 1:15 a.m. There, we were handed an order for our train number 1, engine 382, to run 52 minutes late Sardis to Grenada. The next stop, 51 miles farther. There we got an order for train number 1, engine 382, to run 30 minutes late, Grenada to Winona, the third stop, 22 miles away. At Winona, the same order remained in effect to Durant, our last regular stop, 27 miles farther south and 151 miles from Memphis. At Durant, we were given a clearance card, which meant that we were running on time. Actually, we were still about 30 minutes late then, but we were looking for time all along. The clearance card meant that we were considered on time to all other trains. We didn't have to look out for any of these. They had to look out for us. However, as we were running on a single track, we got an order at Durant to meet and take siding for number 2, the northbound mail, at the little town of Goodman, 8 miles below Durant and 27 miles from the end of our run at Canton. We had been running at very high speed. In spite of the stops at Calhoun Street, the 4 scheduled stops, and taking water twice, we had made up over an hour in 151 miles. Weather and visibility were fairly good, and Casey Jones hoped to bring us in on time at 4:05 a.m. Our engine was one specially built for these trains and had drivers 6 feet tall. On today's fine roadbeds, it could have traveled 100 miles an hour, probably more. We may easily have reached that speed, and we certainly reach 90 often. The section of the line from Memphis to Grenada had recently been acquired from another railroad, and the track had pretty light rail. This fact, rather than the fast schedule, I think, caused some of the engineers to pass up jobs on these fast trains. From Grenada to Canton, however, the rails were standard weight for those days. Anyway, the time we made up put Casey in a good humor, and he talked and joked with me all along. As we traveled through the night, he sounded his new whistle for the crossings, stations, and sidings that we passed. "Sim," he said, "if you keep the old girl hot, we'll go into Canton on time." I said, "Well, I'll keep her hot." And naturally, I did. We took siding at Goodman and were hardly in the clear before number 2's headlight showed up from the south. After it passed, we backed out on the main line and began the last 27 miles of our trip. 15 miles south of Goodman is the little town of Vaughan, approached by an S-curve, which swings first to the right, then back to the left. Naturally, on this type of curve, the engineer and fireman of a steam locomotive cannot see the track ahead at the same time. As we entered this curve, I put in a fire and climbed up and looked out of the cab window on my side so that when we swung to the left, I could look ahead with a clear view of the siding and station. As we came out of the curve, there right ahead of us were the red rear marker lights of a train. Showing red meant that it was on the main line. At once I yelled to Casey, "Oh my Lord, here's something on the main line." He jumped to his feet and looked diagonally across the top of the boiler, at the same time setting the air brakes in an emergency stop. He had to reach up to do it, as the valve was located high on these engines. "Jump, Sim, jump," he shouted. I jumped across the deck, grabbed the handrails, slid down as far as I could go, then turned loose. Casey never had a chance. The engineer's seat on one side and the long boiler which divided the cab on the other made fast escape for him practically impossible. Hitting the ground knocked me unconscious. I woke up about 30 minutes later to hear voices say, "Here he is." When they got me out of the wreckage and I was able to talk, I asked, how about the engineer? And they told me Casey was killed. They said we had hit the caboose of a freight train, gone through it, a car of hay, a car of corn, and halfway through a car of lumber. All of them on the main line, the rest of the train on siding. We had no orders against this train or any other except number 2, which we had already passed. Our clearance card gave us rights over everything, and we didn't have to look out for anyone. I learned there were 2 extra freights, one northbound and one southbound, on the siding at Vaughan that night, and a northbound local passenger train, number 26, in the house track. The passenger train was in the clear, but the siding wasn't long enough for both freights, and to clear northbound number 2, they had to do what railroad men call saw-by. This means to have the trains on the siding back out in turn, leaving the ends clear, one at a time, and to let the passing train through. After letting number 2 by, they had to come out on the main line through the north switch to let that local passenger train into the house track. After doing that, the crews were clearing the north end of the siding for us when an air hose burst under the southbound extra freight, which was pulled by 2 engines, automatically setting the brakes and stalling the train with the rear 4 cars on the main line. If a train is blocking the main line, railroad rules require that a flagman must go out 10 telegraph poles distance and place 2 warning torpedoes 2 rail links apart, then a stop torpedo. If a train approaches, he must also light a red fusee. This flagman must remain out until called in. They should have put out warning signals against us because they knew we had to saw through southbound the way number 2 had done northbound. We saw no flagman or fusees. We heard no torpedoes. Without any warning, we plowed into that caboose. The wreck occurred at 3:52 a.m. We had only 12 miles to go and 13 minutes to go it in. With a clear track, we would no doubt have arrived at Canton on time. Casey Jones was the only one killed. But if we had been properly warned, Casey might have been living today. Anyway, he would not have died in the wreck that night.